This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We are also going to be talking about what else you think is important, which is history, because the Education Ministry has revealed some plans on how they're going to improve the Sejarah subject in schools. This is specifically for Form 4 and 5. It's going to include practical exposure in terms of the Malaysia democratic and election systems.
So this is in response to the results of yesterday's Dewan Negara vote that confirmed that the voting age is going to drop from 21 to 18. There have been growing calls for more voter and political education, but the question here is, what else would you like to see included in our history subject?
Yeah, because there are a lot of other gaps in our history textbooks. They, for example, underrepresent certain minority groups, they don't properly reflect the diversity and the true history of Malaysia, and there are many other things that people argue as well as to what's missing in our history textbooks.
What's missing, what's been taken away, what has been amended. I think there are also just very fundamental issues here about how it is taught. When we spoke about museums, a lot of people said that, I don't bother going to our museums because I'm not interested in seeing sort of a half-baked history of our country being displayed. But going to museums and interacting with stories in that way, I think, is a very real and dynamic and immediate way to experience history outside of books. Because my memory of being taught Sejarah in schools, aside from the fact that aside from the textbook itself, was also the focus on not the story, but the facts. So context was less important somehow than understanding. Context was less important than just understanding dates, you know. I always felt as if it was more important to my teachers or to the exams for me to know exactly when treaties were signed as opposed to why they were needed in the first place. And I think that is a real flaw in terms of how you tell people things.
And it was a very one-way process as well, as a teacher giving you all this information and you just receiving it. And it's not like you can explore the different facets of it or the nuances or the dynamics and the relationships between all the different characters in this story. And I think that contributes to learning history as a boring experience, because you just have to absorb whatever comes and memorize it for the exams.
Well, because there are tests involved, right? And whenever that is included as part of the syllabus here specifically, and where the testing also more or less reflects how you learn it, in which you just have to squeeze out as much information as you can in an hour and a half onto a sheet of paper, that's not going to necessarily inspire you to want to get into it, right? There's also, in my experience, there's never been much room or much experience for us to debate the happenings of history. There's never been a discussion, oh, why did this happen? Or if someone had, today, they could easily bring different facets, different takes on historical events to the classroom and have a discussion on that. That's never really been a thing in my classroom before.
And since they're looking at upgrading the syllabus anyway, right, it seems like a ripe opportunity to talk about exactly that. What else would you like to see introduced into it? What else, how else could we be updating, really, and upgrading our history syllabus? And I think earlier, Ayman, you mentioned this issue of diversity and kind of being able to represent the actual
different groups of people.
Beyond a paragraph. And I think that would be a great way to start. But share your ideas with us. How would you like to see our history syllabus upgraded? How would you like to see it being communicated to students? Call 7733-2900 with your thoughts. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be crossing over after this to Natusha Naidu, who is the co-founder of Imagined Malaysia. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:16 in the evening with Lynn, Ayman and Kelvin, and we've been talking about updates to the history syllabus in schools. That's coming our way because then there's going to be more introduction of issues around our democratic system and things like that. But of course, we know that there have been other complaints about Sejarah textbooks. So we wanted to know, what else would you like to see introduced? What else would you like to see upgraded if we had like a dream wish list of all the things we would like? Call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, let's cross over now to Natusha Naidu, the co-founder of Imagined Malaysia. Natusha, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
So first things first, I guess, what do you think of how our history is being conveyed and taught to us at the moment?
I think that there are basically three ways of which, like, history is being consumed by Malaysians. One is, of course, like, studying in school, like secondary school, and, you know, like, basically studying for exams. That's, like, the first, like, I think, like, the most primary way people have, like, consumed information on history. And then the second is, of course, like, media. And I don't mean just, like, social media and people who are, you know, interested to learn more about history by watching videos and things like that. But I think we kind of downplay how, like, a lot of historical information is consumed through debates in politics. You know, like, we have, like, politicians maybe, like, arguing about what happened in, like, many years ago about, like, you know, Matsabu and the Kepong incident, or how recently last year Imagine Malaysia was embroiled in a controversy because we wanted to talk about textbooks, but in conjunction with an event that was commemorating basically like the Malayan emergency, and how suddenly, you know, there were accusations of, you know, trying to recognize communist insurgents as national heroes, and that became like a really sensational topic. And yeah, just like, you know, how we talk about like the introduction and the implementation of the national economic policy, and going back to what happened in during May 13, 1969. And yeah, so I think, yeah, that's like one of the more sensational consumptions of history. Then, of course, the third one is self-studying and, you know, people who, like me, who want to, you know, become a historian, or, you know, someone wants to be a heritage activist, and this is, like, more specialized and not necessarily reflective of, like, every layer of Malaysian society.
What would be your main criticisms of our current history textbooks?
Well, since I came from that system, I think, as you mentioned earlier, diversity is like a serious issue. How we represent people, like individuals and their stories, or certain communities, is very problematic because, you know, it's selective and a very narrow range, because a certain narrative is trying to be put forward, right? But the second thing that I think is, I guess what really stands out to me and I find very disturbing is how, even though it's not a diverse syllabus, you have a very highly racialized tone in describing whoever, whichever communities or parties and, you know, groups of interest in this event. And, you know, it's not necessarily a very good thing when you see things like how first and foremost, Orang Asli people are, you know, lack representation in the textbook, but also how they are portrayed in the textbook can be problematic, you know. Then, of course, the other thing is how the Chinese community, Malaysian Chinese community, is represented in the textbook, and how racial relations are described, you know, are also very... I don't think it's very healthy, in my opinion. I mean, at that age, at 17, I'm reading a textbook and I'm thinking, I don't think that's a very nice thing to say. And I didn't know how to, you know, articulate it at that point. But now when I think about it, there are ways to, like, you know, talk about race relations or social cohesion and community building in the context of a post-colonial nation. Yeah, so, you know, for me, that I think is really important. That needs a serious revamp.
So we've heard Dr. Mazli Malik say similar things in the past about revamping the syllabus. What would go into the process of reviewing and recalibrating our history textbooks to generally address the concerns that people have about its current state?
Well, I can't really comment on exactly what government, I mean, the Ministry of Education, what's the due process, but from what I understand is that, you know, they usually... have a committee of historians from Malaysian historians, you know, to come together, and then they are supposed to review the textbooks and identify what are the gaps or what are the things that could be rewritten and whatnot. Then they come up with several, like, propositions or proposals about, you know, what could be added, what could be, you know, removed and whatnot. And, but to be honest, like, you know, like, this is something that we at Imagine Malaysia, we are so interested and invested in, so much so we even, like, organized a public forum to discuss about, you know, what's going to happen in terms of the revisions and what is expected. Like, we had people like the illustrator, Fahmi Rizal. We had a political scientist, Helen Ting from UKM, and another person who is actually quite relevant in this discussion, Dr. Ranjit Singh Malhi, who belongs to like a group called Calling for an Inclusive History, and you know he's part of this committee to write a series of books, and apparently the Ministry of Education is supportive of this committee. But the thing is, we don't even really know, because a lot of this information does not become public, and you'd have to know the right channels and whatnot about how this review process is happening. I think it would be great if, like, Dr. Masli, you know, discloses more information about who are the historians who are going to be on the committee and what are the kind of, like, proposals being made. Because, you know, yeah, at the end of the day, like, it is, like, us that, you know, and our children, like, I mean, not that I have kids, lah, but, you know, my future kids maybe, but, you know, people younger than me that are going to be reading these books. And I think we should have a say on, you know, how, like, our education is being formulated. So in terms of that, I think, yeah, like, that's as much as I can say, lah.
And with that said, I mean, what we do know is that Dr. Masli Malik has said that the ministry is planning to, you know, the aim of this improvement, this current improvement, is to enhance the understanding of the young in our country of the democratic and election systems, of course, following the recent passing of the bill to lower the voting age. How do you see this fitting into the existing syllabus?
That's the thing, actually, like, when I did see that statement, right, I was very confused, because this is something that was, I mean, I'm not sure what's his intention here, lah, but, you know, because I came from the same system, right, as I said before, and one thing that I do remember is that we used to have a, like, not compulsory or, was it compulsory? Yeah, I think it was compulsory, yeah, a module on civic education. And it was very comprehensive. Like, I kind of appreciated it at that point because, you know, it taught us about democratic institutions and, you know, a bit more about the federal constitution and the voting process and how basically our institutions work and how, what are the separation of powers, or, you know, I mean, theoretically, what are the separation of powers in Malaysia and things like that. So I'm not sure if, like, what he means is that, you know, basically whatever that was taught in this, like, textbook is being integrated into history to make it a more holistic study, which actually, in my opinion, I think it's okay, because the current syllabus actually looks at the federal constitution and how, like, the federal constitution was developed, right? So, and by incorporating this, I think, you know, because history and politics is, it's extremely, yeah, like, you know, it has a very strong relationship, and history is political. And I think by using history as a way of raising political awareness is a very, it's a very responsible thing to do, I feel. And you know, if you want a good example, like, and not too far away, we can just look at how history and official historiography in Indonesia is very much correlated to, you know, developing political awareness and giving, like, Indonesians opportunity to consider, like, their political preferences or interests based on what they know about their country's like nation building process. So I would commend that move. I think it's a good idea.
So in Malaysia Baru, we are demanding for history that is factual and balanced, also non-biased. Do you think this can realistically be achieved?
Well, honestly, I don't think that's like a very productive goal to have. And also, it's quite unrealistic. But the reason why I say it's unrealistic is not because that, you know, like the idea that, oh, you know, all historical narratives are like one-sided and biased. But, you know, like the historian can never run away from bias because, you know, we can be informed by ideology or things like that. I think what is like super important and what's really like, you know, critical right now is that history can be taught in a way that it allows, it provides space for having discussion and debate. It's reflective in nature. So my interest is mostly in how like history is being taught. And for Imagine Malaysia, it's about not just like focusing on whether you can differentiate something as fact from fiction, but more like how when you bring all these diverse narratives and how they compete with each other, that you can reflect and try to make your own point of view about what you think happened and what perhaps you could learn from a historical event. I think that is something that's really absent because now, as you, also you mentioned earlier, you know, we're just being taught to like treat everything as a fact and just deal with it basically. And I don't think that's right. We should be able to challenge and contemplate and reflect on what we know and what we don't know, basically. So this pursuit of, like, you know, trying to be as factual and non-biased as possible, I don't think that should be, like, the sole focus.
Natusha, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Natusha Naidu, co-founder of Imagined Malaysia. And if you have thoughts on how you would like to see the history syllabus in our schools updated, you can call us 7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Building Fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
It is just about 6:35 in the evening with Lynn, Ayman and Kelvin, and we're talking about history today, specifically our history syllabus, because it is going to be updated to reflect a little bit more about our democratic and electoral system. But then we were thinking, you know, if you're going to make some updates, why stop there? And so we've kind of been opening it up and asking you, what else would you like to see in this? What else would you like to see introduced? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, we have Christine with us on the line. Christine, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi. Hello?
Yes, hi.
Okay. My idea is that when it comes to knowledge, sometimes we tend to place them in categories such as the Sultanate of Malacca, and we categorize them according to the events. The other way of learning something is to go into themes, such as if I want to study about education, you look into the history of education and you widen it, broaden it a little bit, talk about education from the Chinese scholars, you take a little bit about from the Indians, you take a little bit about world history, how the Europeans came to be. So when you come into using a thematic approach, the content in the textbook can be a little bit wider, and that will allow us to be more exposed. And at the end of the day, I believe that to educate a person is to help a person learn how to think critically. So for history to come alive and to be meaningful, the lessons will have to be transferable from the past to the future and making it a bridge, and therefore we can learn from our past mistakes and also be very open to what things have happened instead of saying that, like, for example, I give a very simple example. I'm in Malacca today, visiting Malacca with my son, who's 15, mm-hmm. and I noticed that sometimes when we talk about the experience that we've had, which is like we have been conquered once upon a time. But in the process, because we were conquered, therefore we learned a little bit from the Dutch, we learned a little bit from the Portuguese, we also have learned from the experience. That it was a temporary experience, and that in history, you can see that just because we have had an experience that maybe it was war and it wasn't such a nice experience, it doesn't mean that we cannot learn and excel and even overtake whatever past adversities, you know, mm-hmm. that has happened in the past of history. And when we come to things from a thematic perspective, the focus will be to make history help us to be better human beings for today and for tomorrow. So that's my point, to make it a little bit thematic and also widen the scope of the content. And we will be able to have the bird's eye view to a bigger scope of things and help us think better.
Christine, thank you so much for calling and for sharing that. I think those are really wonderful suggestions.
Yeah, it's a very interesting approach as well to do it in a thematic way, because we're so used to understanding history through a chronology, like this date until this date, or even in historical events. So she suggested just now to do it thematically, it will hopefully allow different perspectives to come in as well, and so that students can understand the different facets of it.
Yeah, and earlier, Ayman, you were talking about the need for diversity in our history books, that we need to be able to learn more about the different cultures, the different people, the different societies that existed within Malaysia. And I think that is essentially why we need to have more Orang Asli history in Malaysia as well. And that's also, of course, coming through on Twitter from Ivan, which says that include more cultural history of Sabah and Sarawakian natives. There should be some sort of introduction to the native races in East Malaysia so that the rest of the nation can understand and be familiar with other cultures in Malaysia. And that is such a key point there, right? Including what Ivan said, is to build some sort of level of empathy for us to understand why they currently are in the situation that they're in, why they're affected by certain issues that we might not be affected in. It makes us a bit more empathetic.
And absolutely. Although just to quickly say, I don't think just native races in East Malaysia.
Yes.
Because, of course, there are Orang Asli here on the peninsula too. So just that.
Yeah, especially if history is used as the means to achieve a nation building goals. So having empathy for all the different minority groups in the country will help achieving the nation building agenda.
To go back to Christine's point, nation building agenda is such a great and kind of, you know, really buzzy word to use, because when I think about what Christine is talking about and the importance of context, right, the importance of being able to see moments in history as just that, moments in part of a larger scheme of things, I think where we tend to fall down is exactly what we think of as nation building, right? Because nation building here should just be building people who understand history, building people who, to echo what Christine was saying, know how to think. But instead, what we often do is to try and, I guess, build certain things that might reflect better upon the current state of Malaysia, or to make us look differently at certain aspects of our lives as they are currently lived. And so I think that kind of backwards storytelling, you know, to try and make sense of the now as opposed to just telling the story of the past, if that makes sense, is also a bit problematic.
I mean, the nation building agenda is one of the important aspects in the history syllabus, because especially in the context of Malaysia, where we're a multicultural society, so which is why we've been highlighting the importance of diversity. And so in that sense of how to create a bersatu padu punya society, it's important. The nation building agenda is important in that sense.
Well, Kay is saying, I'd love to see something like a Malaysian version of Howard Zinn's A People's History of the US. We also need Indigenous-led history. And I think that that's taking it kind of to the next step, right? We keep talking about diversity, but Indigenous-led, I think, is an important way to be thinking about it too.
Yeah, it's important who also gets to write the history textbooks, who gets to have I guess a say in what represents Malaysia, right? Because right now it does seem as if it's quite a small select pool of people that get to contribute to history textbooks, and the process in which that is decided, the process in which that is and that ends up being in material for learning material for schools is not very transparent at the moment.
So we would like to hear from you. You can call us at 7733 2900 with your thoughts. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. And you can tweet us, of course, at BFM Radio. On the line with us now is Idamali. Idamali, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Well, I want to say that for history to be nation building, it should be factual, not the history that has been taught in the textbooks now that is adulterated and is, I should not use this word, but it's pasteurized.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be factual because history is something which really happened 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 70 years, recorded history. It's recorded in books, recorded in archives everywhere. But unfortunately, the history that is taught now is not on national agenda building. It's, in fact, dividing because of political interference. So I wish history will be taught as it is at its worst. That is my main point of contention.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I guess one thing when it comes down to this idea of a factual history is that no doubt that there are facts and,
yep.
and there are, you know, inalienable moments that you can look at and go, that definitely happened then. But in terms of where those stories get arranged and the prominence that they achieve within textbooks, I think that's always up for grabs because ultimately history is still going to be told in a certain way. You cannot have every incident and every event that has ever happened
yeah.
recorded in history textbooks. So I completely understand where Idamali is coming from. But when it comes to how facts are displayed, even that in and of itself, you know, ends up displaying some sort of bias, some sort of story.
Yeah, because like Netusha said just now, even historians have their own biases when they look into historical events. So I don't know, is it a matter of finding a middle ground in, as to all these different perspectives, and how would that even be achieved?
I think it's about accepting the fact that there are going to be biases and about trying to establish what that story is. I think, broadly speaking, now what's happening with our history textbooks is that not only are there very clear biases at play that are in many ways divisive, but also it's just a story poorly told. At its base, it's a poorly told bit of, you know, nation building, if that's what it's meant to be. And that's also a larger issue, right? Like if it were just better written, better displayed, we might not be having this conversation so often.
But also accepting the fact that perhaps a textbook isn't necessarily the be-all and all of all learning materials. You know, I'm looking forward to the day where we can invest in more computers and more phones or whatever in schools or tablets for students to use. Then they can do their own research as to the other things that might have happened, what they want to bring. Hey, I found this interesting fact the other day. I found this interesting piece of history that might have been, that wasn't in the textbook that I'd like to present to the class. So that's also something I think we could explore in the future.
On the subject of, I suppose, factualness, we have Uni on Twitter saying, the purpose of history in schools all around the world is to establish the national narrative, not factual accuracy. That decides what is emphasized, you know, for example, Malacca from the Second Sultan on, or downplayed, for example, World War II communists.
Yeah, and it is also, well, it is also being able to understand that certain narrative, right? And to our caller's point earlier, Christine, who said that it is about building thinkers, it is about being able to critically think about and critically assess that certain piece of information that we have inserted into history books.
Let us know what you think. What would you like to see updated and reflected in the history syllabus? You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:47 in the evening with Lynn, Ayman and Kelvin, and we're talking today about the history syllabus. It's being updated to reflect more about our democratic and electoral systems. But you know, over the years, it has also gone through a fair amount of changes. So we're just asking if you could update it, if you could add and subtract, well, ad mostly, I think. What is it that you would like to see? Call us at 777-332-900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Vinayan says, history needs to promote national integration and unity, reflect truth and lessons to be learned from the rights and wrongs of the past. Bring back our hero, Hang Tuah.
He has been missing from our textbooks, I think, for a while. And perhaps on the note about lessons, it is maybe getting the students to be able to dictate, or rather be able to understand the lessons they are able to learn from that, right? Not so much just absorbing the facts as just what they are.
And we have a WhatsApp from Hakimin Aziz, who says, put more pictures and more evidence in our history books. How we can become the busiest port few hundred years back and who the leaders were at that particular time. I'm sure historians got a story behind this.
Well, that point about a story behind it is crucial, because the story never gets told. The story is a paragraph, a line, you know, it's like, and then Malacca prospered. And it's like, okay, cool. But, you know, I'm sure a lot of work went into that.
I really do also like the suggestion of having more pictures in the history books and also more colours. If I'm not mistaken, the books that I remember were somehow mostly in a strange sepia tone of browns and
blues. Oh, that
blues.
Brown textbook, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was really dull. And the key to, and referring to his idea of it being a story, the key to a good story is being three-dimensional, so we can understand the different arguments about it and the different characters and what they did and what their role was and why they did the things they did.
We also have callers on the line. First up, we have Jamal. Jamal, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi, good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Number one is, you see, everybody talks about our history has been taught, has been taught wrongly and everything. All these bias and non-bias, all kind of explanation out there. But for me, you know, the history, as previously the one caller also said, the history never runs, you know. What we need to do is, I believe, that make history more enjoyable. Put it in a general knowledge text. You see, our general knowledge, especially in Malaysian students, is very poor. I have a daughter in PG3. If you ask her the capital city of neighboring country, she will hardly can answer, you know. Because why? Nowadays, general knowledge all about artists, singers, or these kind of sort of things. Not really what is general knowledge is all about. General knowledge also can come in with the history. If you make it I believe you guys can think about it then. You know, if we make a general knowledge way of teaching our history, I believe the kids will become more enjoyable. We can have contests in the schools, you know, we do not have all this. We have debates, but debate is not good enough. We have to have a contest with the students, among students, about general knowledge. So in general knowledge, we can put in, you know, our history questions. From there, people can learn what happened, what was there. Now, we're talking about our history. I believe history can be taught every day. Every day, we are creating new history. Even Malaysia is been, you know, the Asian tiger. It's blasting people's mind, you know. They always look at Malaysia, you know, a small country. Before 1990, people does not really know where is Malaysia. We used to tell them we are beside Thailand and beside Singapore. But you see, general knowledge way, people know where is Malaysia and what is Malaysia about. What do you think?
Jamal, thank you so much for calling and for sharing that. And I think that is absolutely a reflection of how I learned history before I went to school, or rather how I learned history before it became very formalized. So as somebody who read a lot, I was really, really interested. I mean, for example, when I read Anne Frank's diary, I was fascinated at the idea of why this girl was in hiding, right? And the circumstances that led to that, the people who were looking for her, what is a Gestapo, for example. And I was really interested on my own doing that sort of research. And then when I got to school and thought, okay, now is the time that I'm going to learn it, I realized, ha, no, that is not the case. And so to Jamal's point about general knowledge, I think that if you can link it up, right, and show how so much of history affects the world in which we live today, affects the context of modern countries, modern nationhood, even your daily life, that would go a long way towards people actually taking an interest in it.
My opinion about general knowledge is that it goes beyond the teaching of history, because for me, it requires two things, which is inculcating a reading habit, relating it to our first topic, mm-hmm. inculcating a reading habit among the students. And second, most importantly, is to inculcate the sense of curiosity, that they want to learn these things, they need to learn these things. And those are just things that just need to be imbued in the educational system itself to, you know, encourage students to want to learn and to want to know things that are outside of the curriculum.
Yeah, and that's to Jamal's point also, just injecting elements of fun to it through quizzes, through contests, through competitions. And I guess for me, it's also just through video games, right? I've learned about Japanese history just by playing video games. I've learned about Greek history because that's also through video games. And that's coming through from different mediums. That's coming from quiz shows I used to watch, like Jeopardy! 2.
There are just also a lot of messages talking about the importance of learning world history. That's coming through pretty strongly. And I agree that our current history setup doesn't have enough of a focus on that. I mean, they're called world wars for a reason, and we just don't get to learn enough about it. On the line with us now is Johan. Johan, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi, good evening. Hi. I'm just trying to figure out what is the major problem with our current textbook in history. Because I have my daughter requesting that I send her for tuition for history lessons. That is something which is unheard of during my time. So I would want to suggest the ministry to actually try to revive the textbooks, the history textbooks of the 70s and 80s. Because that was the time when I remember studying history with passion, with interest, because it covers a lot of history. Malaysian, European, Asian countries, you name it. I don't see any problems if we actually try to revive the syllabus that we had during the 70s and 80s. By the way, it's a simpler thing to do.
And
what would you think?
Well, John, I'm curious about what exactly was so kind of riveting for you about that syllabus. You know, what do you think made it kind of easier to understand, easier to process?
Okay, because I remember when I was 10 to 4, it was called Sejarah. Yeah? Then we had to learn about the prehistoric the evolution of man, of mankind. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember reading about the Perak Man when I was in standard 4. So when I went back home, I had to actually dig out all my Britannica encyclopedia to learn more about it. So it gives me the interest for me to actually do my own research. So started from then on, we studied about the Asian history, the European history, on the Industrial Revolution, on how Industrial Revolution evolved to make Europe a very developed region at that time. So somehow the teachers were then were so experienced and skillful to teach us how to appreciate our history. I bet we don't have teachers of that stature now. I don't know.
Fair enough, Johan. Thank you so much. When we were talking about this issue of how we learned history, I think we all also realized that there were some pretty odd chapter orders in the way that we studied. And I agree, listening to Johan talk about that flow, right, of how it could be in terms of making sense of whether it's chronological or just a narrative, it's true. It matters which chapters you put side by side.
Yeah, because that's how, because we tend to understand things through a chronological order. This happened first and this led to this and this led to this. So it makes sense to arrange it chronologically. But we've also had suggestions to do it in a thematic way. And that in itself provides different opportunities because you can explore deeper into that part of history as opposed to strictly sticking to a temporal structure.
We also have Sui Lim, who says history as taught to me in school was about regurgitating a list of names and events. There was no critical thinking, no analysis of the significance or context of the events that happened, which I think is really a summation of everything we've been talking about.
That is just in the test paper, what happened in this year at this point in time. So, and then that's like 20 marks worth. It's not really helpful in trying to remember and having fun with history as a subject.
Yeah, because if you want to encourage critical thinking, you got to present both sides of the argument. You cannot just offer one narrative. You need to offer all the different narratives, and only then you can encourage students to think critically and try to understand things their own way, analyze it from their own perspective.
Well, Kamar Nizam is suggesting all three sides of a story as part of history, because one event could have a few takes on it, which would be a good way of, I think, trying to talk about this exact thing about factual, you know, whether something can ever be factual. I think presenting context of different perspectives would help, at least. Also, we do have this comment that's come through from Munif Malik saying, doesn't matter what the agenda is, whether it's a set narrative, whatever, it won't mean squat if kiddos yawn at 2-second intervals upon reading the books. More pictures and diagrams over walls of paragraphs. Pretty please.
Here, here. That is what I've been asking for. Also, we need more colours, more pictures and more diagrams. Walls of text don't really last long, especially if the history teacher themselves are just reading directly into, reading from the textbook itself.
Kay is back to say, if history is about nation building and setting the national narrative, then we can't build anything strong and meaningful on fantasy. We need to be willing to talk about our past hurts, trauma, how we have and have not moved through it. There's a role for truth and reconciliation hearings. We also need to make sure that women and gender diverse people and migrants and refugees who have been long left out of historical narratives are brought back. I agree that it must go beyond history books. There's so much hidden history in our communities. How do we create spaces to listen, honor, and learn from our living archives?
That is such a great point, right? And I think kids today are more than ready to have this conversation. The teacher there, in that case, just needs to play the role of facilitator, mediator, to make sure that these discussions, which may become quite heated, can be managed well, and then have kids be able to just dissect that and then be able to go home and also have that conversation with their parents.
So we do have to head to the 7 o'clock news, but we'll be back to continue this conversation. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.